College Basketball Insider.
Some news and notes from around the world of college basketball.
In-studio correspondent for WFAN and CBS Sports Radio.
Attention, please, to John Rothstein. Please report to St. Joe's.
The Insider's Insider.
Joining us now with his thoughts and a break it down, John Rothstein.
It's College Hoops Today with John Rothstein.
Let's put the women and children to bed and go looking for dinner. John Rothstein here on the College Hoops Today podcast, coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. This is our special off-season edition in which we will break down the SEC conference from soup to nuts. Want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. We are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, want you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review, let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. And also, send me your SEC related questions on Twitter. I'll get to them later in the show. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. Today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast is brought to you by Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. And now that we've got you all set up with Geico, let's get into the SEC. And the first thing that I look at when I see the SEC conference in men's basketball heading into the 17-18 season is that this SEC league right now is as deep as the conference has been in quite some time. And I think when you're looking at the SEC and you're studying the league standings 1 through 14, I think there's a legitimate chance that 13 out of the 14 teams in this league, with the exception of LSU, will begin practice, okay, in about 2 months with a legitimate hope of playing in the NCAA tournament. Now, what are the big questions coming into the SEC conference this season? First off, you have to look at how many NCAA tournament bids are realistic for this league heading into the next season. I think you look at the SEC and you look at the fact that the league had 5 teams last year make the NCAA tournament. 3 made the Elite Eight: South Carolina, Florida, and Kentucky. I think based on the talent upgrades from top to bottom in this league, I see a potential 7-bid league when I look at the SEC in the 2018 NCAA tournament. But that's all going to come down to what this conference does in the non-conference portion of the schedule in November and December. You think SEC, you obviously think Kentucky. And I think pound for pound, inch for inch, this could be one of the more difficult challenges that John Calipari has had as a head coach, because Calipari has always been better than anybody at molding a group of young talent together in a short period of time. But the difference is right now in this SEC versus SECs of past years is that Kentucky is not going to always be able to play through youth and play through mistakes and walk away with victories. The league has gotten too good. It's much deeper from top to bottom. Another thing I think you want to look at right now when you look at the SEC, which team has the ability to have a season that could obviously be a breakthrough for them as a program? Now, this team played in the Sweet 16 2 years ago, but talking to most SEC coaches this summer, many people believe that Texas A&M will wind up winning the league outright because of the eligibility of J.J. Caldwell. J.J. Caldwell last year was ruled academically ineligible by the NCAA, and Texas A&M did not have a pure point guard to run its team. This year, they have Caldwell, one of the best players in the 2016 class in terms of overall passing ability, and he will join a starting lineup at Texas A&M that features 4 other players that have a chance to be all SEC-type performers in 17-18. Admon Gilder, DJ Hogue, Robert Williams, and Tyler Davis. Another team on the rise in the SEC, the Alabama Crimson Tide. And the head coach of Alabama, Avery Johnson, joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein coming up next. Alabama is one of many teams headed on a foreign tour this summer. The Crimson Tide expected to be one of the more improved teams in the SEC next season, as well as one of the improved teams nationally. And the head coach of Alabama is Avery Johnson, and he joins the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein right now. And it is the 18-year anniversary, coach, of when you hit the game-winning shot in the 1999 NBA Finals for the Spurs against the Knicks. Does it feel all of 18 years ago?
wow, it feels like it was yesterday. And what a great moment in time for not just the Spurs team, but our fan base that was so faithful and loyal all of those years. And I remember in 1995 when we had the best team in the NBA and we lost to the Houston Rockets in the Western Conference Finals, and they went on to win the championship. And I was thinking about that moment after the game in New York when we won the game. You were thinking, man, we could have had two championships. But we were very grateful that that I was a part of a special team with guys like David Robinson and Tim Duncan, Hall of Fame players, and Greg Popovich, who's arguably one of the best coaches in the history of the NBA. So that was a special time in my life, and I was happy to be a part of such a great team and an unbelievable, well-run organization.
Well, the Spurs have always been the model organization for everybody in sports. What elements from that operation have you tried to implement in Alabama?
First of all, just taking care of our players, you know, just trying to meet all of their needs the same way the Spurs did it for the players on our Spurs teams. And, you know, and on the college level, you know, meeting their needs academically and socially and on the court, you know, giving them the training and the teaching and the discipline that they need to be successful, and working with all of the different highs and lows of handling adversity on and off the basketball court, and training them in terms of how to problem solve and matriculate on a college campus, and dealing with all of the different people that they encounter. So just helping them grow and develop and trying to meet all of their needs here as a student athlete on campus. And I just having those type of skills to just help them develop the same way the Spurs helped us develop on and off the court in the San Antonio community.
You know, and the community at Alabama and being a student athlete at Alabama has always been viewed as a tremendous opportunity to get involved with a university that was great in college football. And now you're trying to add to that with men's basketball. How have you used the success that the football program has had to help kickstart things from a basketball perspective?
Well, when I arrived here on campus for my press conference, you know, Nick Saban was one of my first visits, and just went and met with him, and we've built a strong relationship, and we meet as often as we can, and we both are obviously busy, but I enjoy my time when I have an opportunity to meet with Coach Saban. He oftentimes visit with some of our recruits, high-level recruits, and their families, and you know, I attend quite a few football practices. I go to all of the home games. I go to some road games, depending on my schedule. So we have a really strong relationship, and we communicate. And he's not a texting guy, but you know, when I have a question, I'll call him, and he'll get back to me immediately. So the success of football, we think we want to leverage it. We have a tailgate right next to the stadium where our recruits and their families come to football games. But we're very, very involved with our football program, and they're more involved at any time of our basketball program with basketball. All of their assistant coaches, they've just been a great resource in terms of information. Information and all of the different things that we do here on campus. So it's been we've built a strong relationship.
Well, Avery, think about what you've already said. You played for one of the great coaches in the NBA, in the history of the NBA, and Greg Popovich, and you're on the same campus as one of the best coaches in the history of college football in Nick Saban. How do the personalities and the habits of Greg Popovich and Nick Saban kind of coincide, and how are they different?
Well, they're basically twins in a lot of ways, because they all believe in, you know, great practice habits, and they obviously have strong assistant coaching staffs, and even though they have a chance, they like to micromanage, but at the same time they give their staffs flexibility to be themselves and coach and teach and work with players, and they both have, in their own way, unbelievable people skills and knowing how to motivate people and deal with, you know, sponsors in the NBA in Popovich's case, or donors in Coach Saban's case, and but, you know, they both believe strongly in what they believe and how to get the job done, and there's not much gray area. And they love disciplined environments, and they both are strong with the minute details of the game that they know can be huge in terms of helping a team be successful. And I think they're different in ways. Coach Saban likes to play golf a lot more. Coach Popovich, you know, he's a wine connoisseur and a historian, and he travels internationally and abroad a lot. And Coach Saban loves to get out on his boat and spend a lot of time on Lake Tuscaloosa and different places, in Florida. So they're like twins in a lot of ways in terms of what they believe in and how to help their team maximize their potential.
Alabama head coach Avery Johnson joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Crimson Tide expected to be one of the better teams in the SEC and one of the more improved teams in the country next season. And Avery, you made Alabama very competitive during your first 2 years in Tuscaloosa. What do you think is going to be the biggest difference this season versus your first two?
Well, I think the biggest difference is, you know, we got five freshmen that were all highly recruited, and also a guy in Daniel Giddings that was a redshirt last year. So we got six new players, and they're all young, and but they have a ton of energy. They're highly skilled and very talented, and I just think, you know, blending them into what we've doing in our culture and the way we like to play on both ends of the floor, and it's going to be very interesting in how it all comes together, and our returning players are critically important. I know the freshmen, especially in this era of social media, gets, you know, a lot of the hype, and that's great. We that's a good problem to have, but our returning players are going to be very important to the success of our team. So blending, you know, the incoming players and the returning players, that's my job, and that's why we're excited about this Canadian trip, because we'll be able to go and play three games and take a look at some different lineups and matchups and, you know, who plays well in what situations, and that'll give us three games of information that we can evaluate going into the fall.
And one of your returning players who didn't play in a game last year is Daniel Giddens, a transfer from Ohio State. How would you rate his progress during the redshirt year heading into what will be his first year at the University of Alabama?
Yeah, he had a very successful redshirt program. He gained some weight. He got stronger. We need him to provide that muscle inside for us. You know, we were one of the best rebounding teams in the SEC, but we lost our two frontline players in Jimmy Taylor and Bola Ladeon. So it's going to be very important for Daniel to come in and help stabilize our front court with Dante Hall. And, we have some other freshmen in Galen Smith and Alex Reese coming in that are young players. We have some other guys that we can play smaller at the four position or the stretch four position with Braxton Key or Riley Norris. But Daniel Giddings providing that muscle inside is going to be very important to the success of our team.
Now, he is obviously the impact veteran via transfer, but the impact newcomer that is in bold print is Colin Sexton. You were a highly successful point guard, one that led a team to an NBA championship. I'm curious, though, if there was one player, past or present, that Colin Sexton most reminded you of, who would it be?
Well, I think it's a combination of, you know, the old Isaiah Thomas, that type of scoring ability, but yet a very good passer. And that's what we love about all of our wing players in our freshman class. You know, John Petty and Herb Jones, along with Sexton, they are all very good passers. And even Alex Reese. And, you know, we just need ball handling and decision making to go along with our returning players like Dejon Ingram and A.J. Jr., you know, those guys who got significant time for us at the guard position. So I would say more like the old Isaiah Thomas or a little bit of Kyrie Irving, a blend of all of those guys.
Alabama head coach Avery Johnson joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Alabama getting set to go on a foreign tour to Canada, obviously prepping for this season. And coach, you are also prepping for the SEC by putting together, you know, a very arduous non-conference schedule. You know, I've been doing this a long time. On December 3rd, you're going to host a very good Central Florida team. On December 6th, you're going to host a Rhode Island team that was inches away from going to the Sweet 16. And then on December 9th, you go to Arizona. That's as aggressive a six-day stretch as I have seen in all my years covering college basketball. How much did you really split the fine-tooth comb out and bring the fine-tooth comb out when you were putting together this non-conference schedule?
Yeah, you know, last year we broke down our schedule and we analyzed the schedule of all of the teams that went to the NCAA tournament. And we looked at, you know, what we're bringing in, what we're bringing back, and we just looked at, you know, best case scenarios of our schedule of, you know, if we win X amount of games or maybe if we fall short or if we have the same record this year as we had last year, what gives us our best chance to not only get in the tournament, but if we are fortunate to make it, have the type of schedule that, you know, we could feel confident playing any team in the country, whatever style of basketball that they play. So we felt with the schedule that we have, you know, you want to be able to try to win as many games as you can and have good wins. And if you come up short, you want the committee to look at your resume and say that you went out there and challenged yourself. And we felt that's what Vanderbilt did last year, and they got in the tournament with 15 losses, and you know, we were sitting there 19-14, and we didn't get in. So that's what we're trying to accomplish, and that's why we're going to play Arizona, and who, you know, going to be one of the top five teams in the country. And we're playing Texas in Birmingham, and you know, we're playing a really good Minnesota team in the Barclays Classic. So we want Alabama. When people are talking about Alabama, yeah, they'll talk about recruiting class and returning players, but we want them to talk about how we potentially could have one of the strongest schedules in the country next year. And we challenged ourselves and we tried to put together a resume that was going to be very appealing to the NCAA committee.
And to me, that shows that you're not really running from the buzz or the expectations in your program, but you're embracing them. How will you coach these kids through dealing with the limelight and the expectations? Because for Alabama basketball, that hasn't happened in quite some time.
That's right. And again, that's why we're having this conversation. That's why you're hearing a lot about this buzz about Alabama. Now, we don't have any unrealistic expectations. You know, I didn't tell everybody by year three we're definitely going to win it all. No, we're just building something. And this is another step in the building process. And we had to get the recruiting right and the scheduling and, you know, the way we handle our players. You know, we've changed, overhauled our nutrition program, you know, the way we travel on the road. If you're going to be a first-class program and have that type of culture, winning culture, we had to overhaul it. Quite a few things in our program, and we built it in a way that we think we could be very competitive with, you know, all of the teams across the country, and we want to make sure that we represent the SEC in a first class manner, and it's been great. It's been a lot of fun building it, and we've had some changes to our coaching staff, and you know, now we have Yasir Roseman, who came over to us from Georgia, and Antoine Petway's been here from day one with me. He's another SEC guy, went to Alabama. He's been coaching here at Alabama, and we have John Pelfrey, who's been a head coach in the SEC and was a terrific player at Kentucky. So we feel we've, you know, in year three now, we're building it and we're going in the right direction. And this was my vision from day one.
Well, and the vision, it seemed like, too, from the SEC conference was to have a league that could be mentioned among the best in college basketball. And it feels like this season right now, the SEC has a chance to follow up on some of the breakthroughs that it had last year during the NCAA tournament. What has it been like from when you got the job until now in terms of the feeling about the SEC among the league coaches?
Well, the SEC, from a basketball standpoint, I mean, and you've been in college basketball longer than I've been in it. I don't think it's gotten the type of buzz or in the last 10 years that it's gotten coming into this year. And hopefully we can leverage that and we can potentially get seven teams in the NCAA tournament, because I think the depth in our conference, you know, looking at what's happening with Missouri, they've been completely turned around. And, you know, obviously South Carolina had a great run last year, and Florida and Kentucky's been very consistent, and Texas A&M is going to be good this year. And, you know, so we got quite a few teams that are on the rise that have had great recruiting classes, and it's going to be pretty interesting what happens. Florida's an outstanding, Mike White's done a good job with them, and so we just want to join the party. We don't want to be on the outside looking in, and we'll have that opportunity, and hopefully we'll, you know, stay healthy, and we'll be a much better offensive team to go along with continue to be a solid defensive team and give ourselves a chance. But I just know we have an opportunity to have a better resume overall than we've had since I've been here, and we just got to work at it and, you know, be smart about it, and hopefully our players will continue to get better and fight through adversity and be a little bit more mentally tough. But this all falls on Coach Avery. This is not the players. They're kids, and that's the way it should be. You know, we have to do a better job of coaching than we've done, and we're up for the challenge. My staff and I, we're up for that challenge.
You know, you mentioned you hope to be a little bit better offensively. Last season, you grinded out a number of victories, and you only averaged as the team 69 points per game. How much of a jump do you think you could make in that area?
Well, the thing for us is we got to take better care of the ball. I don't think any team's going to score and reach their maximum potential offensively when you have, 100 more turnovers than assists. We had a problem with careless turnovers, and which led to wasted possessions on offense and droughts offensively in the game. So hopefully with experience and depth at positions, we'll do a better job of taking care of the basketball and get shots at the basket and, you know, make more of our open shots. And we got to do a better job at the free throw line. You know, we had one game last year where we're 9-for-26 from the free throw line. That doesn't bode well for winning games. So I just think, better spacing, setting better screens, and scoring more in transition. Just the fastest team I've had in terms of foot speed and being able to get the ball up and down the floor. And so hopefully we'll get some more easy transition baskets and just be a better executing team, both against man-to-man and zone defenses.
You know, consistency is the part of every program which a coach – you know, always seems to just really, really spend time being concerned about. You played with one of the most consistent athletes in the history of professional sports in Tim Duncan, and you coached another in Dirk Nowitzki. I'm curious, how much will you reference those two guys with your own team during a practice just to make a point in terms of the company that you've kept during your life in basketball?
Yeah, I don't wear it out, but I'll use some of my playing career and guys that I've coached as a reference point, and because these kids love the NBA, and those guys with Dirk, you know, going in his 20th year, and Tim Duncan recently retiring, they know those guys and they respect them. So I'll utilize that sometime, but you don't want to overdo it. Our kids, like kids all across the country, they love the NBA, so. You know, I'll sprinkle it in from time to time and try to use it as a teaching point. And you can see their eyes and you know, wide open, and their ears perk up a little bit when you mention some of those guys' names because they have such a great sense of respect for how consistent they were, the work that they put in, their preparation. And sometimes we'll even watch some game film and old footage of those guys, Tim Duncan playing, and or during the season if Dirk is playing in the game, and the guys, maybe if they watch the game, they'll reference something that I talked about in reference to Dirk that they saw in an NBA game. So it's pretty cool and neat to have that type of angle and interest from our players, knowing that I've either played with or coached those guys.
And those are two guys that every single time they stepped on the floor, they had monumental expectations. What are your expectations for this team during the 17-18 season?
Well, in closing, I'll just say that, you know, we always talked about year three in a sense being year one, that we're going to take 2 years and we're going to have our, you know, share of wins and losses. And we've had some terrific wins and we've had some disappointing losses. But in year one and two, it was just trying to change a culture, get a system in place, and eventually bring in a strong recruiting class, which we've done, and now let's see where we can go from here in terms of eventually getting in the NCAA tournament and hopefully giving ourselves a chance to win a championship. So we're right on schedule. This is not a make-or-break year for anybody, but we want to continue to show progress in our practice habits, progress in becoming a better home court team, protecting our home court. We were pretty good on the road in the SEC last year. That needs to continue. And hopefully, you know, we'll get our name called because of the type of resume that we've built in the regular season. But I like where we're going. You know, we're still climbing up a hill, and we're trying to catch some people. And at the same time, we know there's some people behind us trying to catch us. So we got to just keep climbing and keep building. But we're not trying to build anything with a microwave. We've built it slow, and we're trying to do it the right way so that we can get to a point where we have consistent success instead of maybe having a really good year and then falling back. We want to have consistent success. And we've had some teams in our conference that were great models for us, especially when Billy Donovan was at Florida. They had their football team and basketball team, you know, having consistent success at the same time. And we have the same potential here at Alabama.
Well, Avery, thanks for a couple minutes. Know how busy you are. Safe travels to Canada. We'll be following your foreign tour over the next couple of weeks, and we'll talk to you down the line as we get closer towards the season.
Okay, thanks a lot for having me on, and Roll Tide.
We'd like to thank Alabama head coach Avery Johnson for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. I want to remind you to subscribe to the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein on iTunes. We want to be your Bible for the college basketball season and beyond. Once again, we are the only college basketball podcast coming to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. Also, want you to check out the College Hoops Today fan page on Facebook. Give us a like, give us a review. Let us know what you think of the product we're bringing to you 52 weeks out of the calendar year. In today's episode of the College Hoops Today podcast is brought to you by Geico. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. Geico has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money. And time now for our social media portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. Send me your questions on Twitter. I'll get to them. I'm at John Rothstein. That's John, J-O-N. And our first question comes from Hamp Hickman. It's John, is Ole Miss a bubble team forever, or will we finally be good enough to make it back to the NCAA tournament? Look, I think Ole Miss is guards right now with Brian Tyree, with Markel Crawford, the grad transfer from Memphis, with DeAndre Burnett, with also Terrence Davis and the four-star freshman guard Devontae Shuler. Gives Andy Kennedy's squad a real chance to make the NCAA tournament. I think Ole Miss perimeter-wise is as good as any team in the SEC. Our next question comes from Full or True Maroon Nation. It's John, how good can Nick Weatherspoon be for Mississippi State? And look, Nick Weatherspoon is the one player that Ben Haaland has signed that he has openly compared to Russell Westbrook. Nick Weatherspoon is a five-star recruit. Nick Weatherspoon is somebody that, for all intents and purposes, okay, had the ability to go to a place like Carolina, to go to a place like Kentucky. He had this type of upside. I think you're going to see him and Lamar Peters together a lot for Mississippi State, and it's part of, obviously, that hope for Mississippi State fans that they turn a corner in year three under Ben Haaland. An interesting nugget on Ben Haaland. Year three has always been a year of breakthrough for him. His combined record at Northern Arizona, Pitt, and UCLA in year three is 82-20. And now that we've got you set up with all your social media needs, it's time to go through our news and notes portion of the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. And now we will start with some power rankings on the SEC.
John's SEC Power Rankings.
Kentucky is going to be 1, Florida 2, A&M 3, Alabama 4, Auburn 5, Ole Miss 6. Then things got really, really tough to gauge. Vandy is 7, a lot of proud veterans there. Missouri 8 with Michael Porter Jr. Arkansas 9, Mississippi State 10, Tennessee 11, Georgia 12, South Carolina 13, LSU 14. One of the reasons why Missouri was number 8, they've got the SEC Preseason Player of the Year.
John's SEC Preseason Player of the Year.
And that, as expected, is Michael Porter Jr., who committed to Conzo Martin when Conzo Martin took the Missouri job and hired his father, Michael Porter Sr. This kid could very well be the number one pick in the 2018 NBA draft. The question is, can Michael Porter Jr. do for Missouri what Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz could not do respectively for LSU and Washington? Take those teams to the NCAA tournament. Now, let's find out who the other four top players in the SEC are heading into the 17-18 season.
John's SEC Preseason First Team.
Michael Porter Jr. is obviously on the list. We're also going to go with Quindari Weatherspoon from Mississippi State, Mustafa Haran from Auburn, Robert Williams from A&M, and then Yante Maton from Georgia. Obviously, some freshmen could take a seat at the table as the year progresses, but those are five players returning who are really, really strong. Time now also to look at who could be the sleeper in the SEC next season.
John's SEC Sleeper.
I'm going with Ole Miss. Obviously, I talked a little bit a couple of minutes ago about the depth on the perimeter that Ole Miss has. Also think you're going to like what they have inside if they can get good production out of Drake transfer. Dominic Olenicek, check the spelling there and the pronunciation. Olenicek will be the guy in the middle for Ole Miss. Also, Andy Kennedy is very high on Bruce Stevens, a really talented junior college transfer that probably will be the foreman for Ole Miss this season. So that's, I think, what you're looking at when you really split the atom for Ole Miss. They've got a great chance, in my opinion, to get to the NCAA tournament. But again, as we know, always a different dynamic when you're dealing with the SEC in terms of depth. Now let's look at who the impact freshmen are.
John's freshman to watch in the SEC.
All right, Michael Porter Jr. and Jeremiah Tillman are 1-2 from Missouri. Then we have a slew from Kentucky: Kwadi Green, Hamidou Diallo, Kevin Knox, Jared Vanderbilt, P.J. Washington, Nick Richards, and also Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. 2 from Alabama: Colin Sexton and John Petty. Tremont Waters from LSU, Nick Weatherspoon from Mississippi State, Rayshon Hammonds from Georgia, and then Chuma Okeke from Auburn. I'm hearing Chuma Okeke could very well be in line to start for Auburn as a freshman. Now, let's try to find some impact transfers.
John's transfers to watch in the SEC.
Igor Kolachev and also Jalen Hudson at Florida. Dwayne Wilson, a grad transfer from Marquette who's headed to Texas A&M. Markel Crawford, Bruce Stevens, Dominic Olenicek for Ole Miss. Corey Holden from South Carolina. James Daniel from Tennessee. Cassius Robertson for Missouri. He's a grad transfer from Canisius. Made 96 threes last season. Then Daniel Giddens at Alabama. Time now to find out some breakout guys.
John's SEC breakout players for next season.
We'll start in Lexington with Wenyen Gabriel. Heard he's been Kentucky's best player this summer. Chris Chioza from Florida. Donta Hall from Alabama. Xavien Stapleton from Mississippi State should start for the Bulldogs this year. Joe Toy from Vanderbilt. Jerry Baptiste from Vanderbilt. Then I'm going to go with Austin Wiley from Auburn. Rakeem Felder from South Carolina. Skylar Mays from LSU. And Jordan Harris from Georgia. So there you have our SEC breakdown from soup to nuts. We'd like to thank Alabama head coach Avery Johnson for joining the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein. We'll be back next week as we break down the Big 12 conference from soup to nuts. We'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. This was the College Hoops Today podcast with John Rothstein.